Welcome back to Robbinsdale Revisited. I'm Pete Ritchie, president of the Robbinsdale Historical Society.
And I'm Crystal Void, a dues-paying member of the Robbinsdale Historical Society. If you live in Robbinsdale, or if you've ever just driven down West Broadway, you know we've got a lot of proud history here. But today, we are diving deep into a decade when our quiet little town was the absolute epicenter of American pop culture and, depending on who you asked in the 1920s, the capital of American moral decay.
That's right. We're talking about the era of the spicy joke book, specifically Captain Billy's Whizbang. At its absolute peak, this pocket-sized digest of jokes, flapper culture, and small-town gossip was selling nearly 500,000 copies a month. And every single bit of it was born right here.
Now, if you're a musical theater fan, you've probably heard of it. In The Music Man, when Harold Hill is trying to scare the parents of River City, he warns them that their kids are reading Captain Billy's Whizbang. But most people don't realize that Captain Billy was a real guy, and his Whizbang farm was right here in Robbinsdale.
Yep, his real name was Wilford Hamilton Fawcett. He was a veteran who actually lied about his age at 16 to fight in the Spanish-American War. Later, he worked as a police reporter for the Minneapolis Journal until World War I broke out. He went off to fight again, made captain, and ended up working on the military newspaper, The Stars and Stripes, out of Camp Georgia in Virginia.
And that's where he got the nickname Captain Billy. While writing for the troops, he realized something. The doughboys needed a laugh. After the war ended in November 1918, he came back to Minneapolis and he tried running a bar called the Army and Navy Club. But then Prohibition hit in 1919 and made selling alcohol illegal. So Captain Billy pivoted to his backup plan, publishing a men's humor magazine.
And he had absolutely no backing. None of his friends wanted to invest. They thought a pocket-sized joke book was a total gamble. So Billy and his family did it themselves. In October 1919, right inside his Robbinsdale home, he wrote and edited the very first issue. He printed it on a little hand press, his wife set the type, and his young sons literally licked the stamps and hauled boxes of magazines to the Robbinsdale post office in a little wooden play wagon.
The first run was just 2,000 copies, and they sold out instantly. By 1921, they were selling 350,000 copies a month. By 1923, it was 425,000 copies a month. It was such a massive success that Fawcett built Robbinsdale's very first skyscraper, a three-story brick building right at the end of the streetcar line. It housed the Security State Bank on the first floor, and the expanding Fawcett publications were on the upper floors.
We actually have a copy of a local newspaper article from the Northern Headlight, dated September 17th, 1924. Hey, Crystal, how did the town view the building back then?
They were so proud of it. Listen to this. Robbinsdale's brick skyscraper, where 3 million readers all over the United States look to find their jokes, love stories, and blood-curdling adventure yarns, has added another story so that it is one of the most impressive buildings in the city. Tourists swinging along the Pines to Palms route see the Fawcett sign first, and though they have reached the home of that amazing little magazine that made Robbinsdale famous, Captain Billy's Whizbang.
They called it Aladdin's Lamp. The article says the company's payroll in Robbinsdale was $125,000 annually, and that was a massive fortune for a small town in 1924. But today we want to do something special. Instead of just talking about the history, we want to actually read from the magazine.
We've got archives of Whizbang issues, as well as its nitwit stepbrother, which was called Smokehouse Monthly and started in 1926. So today, Pete and I are going to spend the rest of this episode sharing these 100-year-old jokes, poems, and Captain Billy's personal columns so we can experience exactly what our great-grandparents were laughing about.
So let's start with Captain Billy's editorial column. He loved to travel the country. He was quite the celebrity, but he always came back to Robbinsdale, which he affectionately called his Whizbang Farm. Here's an excerpt of him returning home in 1922. After an extended trip of 2 months, which led me throughout the North American continent, it was a rare treat to settle down again to routine duties on the Whizbang farm. The main street of our little Gopher Prairie looked mighty good to a tired, worn-out farmer. 'Twas indeed a pleasure to view the Howard Lumber Yard, with its red fence and shed, and to grasp the sturdy hand of our village postmaster and storekeeper, Bud Nassett. J.J. McCormick, who was a depot agent and telegraph operator, greeted me at the station. "How are you, Billy, you old son of a gun?" That was the wholehearted way Mac welcomed back the wayward pilgrim. Arm in arm, we walked down Main Street to Gus Urban's meat market to inquire to the price of the livestock. Mr. Urban, in his usual jovial manner, informed us that cows bought 5 cents a pound and the bull was priceless.
Bull is priceless. So that's a double meaning if I ever heard one. He's basically admitting that the whole magazine is full of BS.
Right. Absolutely. And so he continues, directly across the street, neatly encased in imitation granite blocks of concrete, is our only bank, the Security State Bank of Robbinsdale. And it hasn't gone bump in nigh on to 4 years. Joe Roche was selected as cashier, and Joe successfully piloted his financial bulwark. Joe also manages the Robbinsdale Baseball Nine. After making a small touch at the bank, it was home to the farm.
I love how he casually mentions making a small touch at the bank. That's 1920s slang for getting a quick loan or withdrawing some cash. And Captain Billy also wrote a poem about Robbinsdale in the January 1922 issue. So let's read a little bit of it. It's called The Little Old Hometown. Pete, do you want to give it a go?
Sure, I'm going to keep trying Captain Billy's voice here. There are fancier towns than our little town. There are towns that are bigger than this. And the people who live in a little old town don't know the excitement they missed. There are things you see in the wealthier town that you can't in a town that is small. And yet up and down, there is no other town than our own little town after all.
It may be true that the streets ain't long, nor wide and maybe not straight. But the neighbors you know in your little town all welcome a fellow. It's great. In the glittering streets of a glittering town, with its palace and pavement and thrall, in the midst of a throng, you will frequently long for your own little town after all.
Aw, it's kind of sweet. Amidst all the dirty jokes, he had a genuine love for local community. Of course, he immediately followed that sweet sentiment. up with a bunch of ridiculous jokes about his neighbors.
Yes, and let's get into the actual jokes. Let's start with a section he called Robbinsdale Society Notes. This was his parody of a local small town newspaper column. For example, Alex Jones' old cow Rosebud had a calf last Saturday morning. Both are doing well. Joseph Hoskins, our local barber, received his spring supply of hair tonic this week. Cynthia Hansen, who is taking a correspondence course in cooking, received another lesson recently.
Yeah, the correspondence course in cooking. Imagine waiting in the mail to find out how to boil an egg.
Right? And here's another quick local one about the bank director, Olaf Connor. Olaf Connor, one of the directors of the Security Bank in Robbinsdale, suggests that, to keep people correctly informed of the days of rapid divorce and remarriage, there should be produced an annual volume called Who's Who's. But what's the good of an annual?
Who's Who's? That's the 1920s. You know, it's funny that Captain Billy uses real names. He has Robbinsdale set up kind of like his Lake Wobegon, but all of the names are real names. Howard Lumber, Gus Urban owned the meat market. People think high divorce rates are a modern thing, but clearly Robbinsdale was dealing with some scandalous gossip back then. Now, we promised you the bulk of today's show would be the actual jokes that made our great-grandparents gasp. Crystal and I have divided these into two piles, some classic character-driven gags and some short poetic explosions of pedigree bunk straight from Captain Billy's actual pages.
Let's start with the character gags. And since these have actual dialogue, Pete and I are going to act them out for you. So Pete, you play the fellas and I'll jump in as the women.
If you say so. Let's start with the classic trip to the dressmaker.
I had a terribly embarrassing experience at the tailor shop yesterday.
What happened?
He asked me if I wanted my new skirt long enough to cover the subject or short enough to hold the attention.
Oh, hold the attention, definitely. Let's go up to the Half Moon parking lot area at Sunset Hill for this next one. The young man took his date up to a dark, secluded parking spot on the hill. Are you cold, dear? He asked, suggestively, leaning in close.
No, but I think you're about to be frozen out.
Ouch. Ho, ho, ho. Now, you can't talk about the 1920s without talking about the country folks coming into the city and seeing how the other half lived. let's head on over to West Broadway.
What's wrong, Silas?
Well, I saw one of them city flappers walking down West Broadway. Her dress was so short and her stockings were so low that I couldn't tell if she was coming or going. But I sure stood there a long time trying to figure it out.
Silas, keep your eyes on the tractor. Here's a little one-liner comparing girls to Prohibition's finest bootleg creations.
You know, my girl's like a bottle of bootleg gin.
How's that? Pack a mean punch?
No, one taste and you lose your head completely.
Let's do a gossip piece between two young ladies. Pete, would you like to read this for us?
Did you know that Gertrude has decided to give up wearing those short silk skirts? No, why? She found out the boys were looking at her ankles instead of her face, and she claims her face has a much better personality.
Gertrude, nobody is looking at your personality in 1922. So, let's turn to the marriage market and hear a modern proposal.
Darling, if I ask you to be my wife, will you give up smoking, drinking, and staying out until dawn with jazz bands?
Why, sweetheart, of course I will.
Good, then consider yourself rejected. I like my girls with a little pep.
Reverse psychology, you wanted a wild flapper. Speaking of wild, let's head down to the beach.
The lifeguard walked up to her, looking strict. Miss, you can't swim in that suit. It's far too revealing.
Oh, don't worry. I don't intend to swim. I just want to see how many boys I can drown from the shore.
Dangerous. Now, let's sit on the parlor sofa. The guy next is running out of time. May I hold your hand for just 1 minute?
No, the parlor clock is 10 minutes slow, and I don't care to waste the extra time.
She's keeping a strict schedule. How about this aviation gag? I hear you took that pretty chorus girl up in the airplane yesterday. How did she behave? Oh, she was a sweet angel. The minute we got up to 5,000 feet, she told me that if I didn't keep both hands on the wheel, she'd make me land immediately.
Good for her. Gotta keep those pilot hands where we can see them. And finally, let's do a mother-daughter chat. I had a terrible scare last night. A man followed me all the way down the dark alley.
Mercy, did you run?
No, I walked very slowly. But thank goodness, he finally managed to catch up.
Yeah, it's definitely a different kind of humor for a different world.
It really is. So let's dive directly into the Real Deal archives. These next ones are actual printed-on-the-press excerpts from Captain Billy's whiz-bang issues between 1920 and 1921. I'll read this first piece of actual mail from the August 1920 issue. Dear Billy, don't you think the short skirts the girls are wearing make us look lots shorter? From Daisy Fields. Yes, Daisy, but they make us men look lots longer, so what's the difference? Says Whizbang Billy.
And from the very same issue. Dear Skipper, what's the difference between a sewing machine and a kiss? Be curious. And Captain Billy says, one sews seems nice, and the other seems so nice.
Of course, the magazine loved poetry. They called this section Smokehouse Poetry. Let's read this quick little verse from August 1921 called A Passing Breeze. A passing breeze exposed her knees. Milady did not care. She blushed for fear her naked ear might cause the men to stare.
How about this poem from the January 1921 issue? It's called Seeing Through Her. It's often been said we cannot hope to fathom womankind. And to that fact, the other sex might well make up its mind. But we have called the libel out and dragged it in the dirt. We see right through her now, thanks to the modern skirt.
That refers to these ultra-thin sheer flapper fabrics that caused such an uproar. So here's a little bit of advice for daughters on a drive, also from August 1921. Mother, may I a-riding go? Yes, my sweet Lucille. But give your friend this sound advice. Keep one hand on the wheel.
Again with the hands on the wheel. Well, here's another one from August 1920. In a parlor, we're three. My girl, a lamp, and me. Three's a crowd, without a doubt. Wasn't it nice when the lamp went out?
Billy, he was shameless. P,
Pete, read us these quick hit relationship rhymes.
You got it. Two short ones from June 1921. Life is just one damn thing after another, and love is just two damn things after each other. And the best and worst of it is that neither is most to blame if you've forgotten my kisses and I've forgotten your name.
Oh, snap. Okay, let's wrap up the poetry section with a quick romantic toast from August 1921. He sipped the nectar from her lips as 'neath the moon they sat and wondered if another man had drank a mug like that.
Drank a mug like that? That is not romantic. Finally, let's look at how Captain Billy described the sheer dizzying speed of the 1920s lifestyle in his January 1921 issue that is titled The Anatomy of a Flapper. If this world keeps increasing its speed, as it has in the past, our heads will be going so fast that we will look like fishbowls. Just now, we're traveling so fast that our hip pockets dip sand as we are going around the corners, and our feet come up so often that people think we're lying down.
Well, and that's a pretty important point. Captain Billy's whiz-bang was a massive pop culture hit, but looking back at its pages today, we see some humor that has aged incredibly poorly. So mixed in with the standard puns were jokes that relied on racism, misogyny, homophobia. They were just some cheap shots that aren't funny these days. And it is important to acknowledge that they were there. Pete, I'm a big fan of people looking at primary sources and sort of examining them and making their own decisions. If people wanted to look more at Whizbang magazines, where could they find some?
Well, since the copyrights on a lot of these have run out, the Gutenberg Project or the Internet Archive, also the Wayback Machine, you can find the entire text from Captain Billy's Whizbang and free audiobooks, strangely enough, of Captain Billy's Whizbang all over the internet. So it's worth taking a peruse through. You might find yourself reading for quite a while before you find something really funny or something that speaks to us 100 years later. But the original source material is all there.
And it's amazing that it's out there. And I think that helps to put these magazines in context because they were these complex products of their era. A lot of the pieces came straight from jokes that Captain Billy heard from fellow soldiers in the army. And he even ran contests asking readers to send things in like their best Scottish jokes. Interestingly, some of those ethnic gags actually flipped the script, turning the tables on the storyteller or the very stereotypes they were mocking. So while those prejudiced jokes make up a relatively small slice of the overall content, they are a stark reminder of how much our cultural standards have evolved. And yet, despite those flaws, the magazine's sheer impact is undeniable, so much so that Ravensdale still celebrates Whizbang Days every single year to honor the publication that truly put our town on the map.
Yeah, and you know what? Just from memory, because as I was reading through these Whizbangs, I'll give you an example of one of the times that he kind of flipped the script. You know, the joke starts out with this Jewish kid in North Minneapolis, and he's been sent out by his father to find the dad's three missing donkeys. And so he's walking down the street, and these three young toughs come up to him, and they're giving him a hard time, really, for being Jewish. They're calling him names, et cetera, et cetera. And he turns to them and says, well, you know, my dad sent me out to find three asses, and I guess I have. Some of that stuff is hard to read, but he didn't rely on it entirely, and I have seen magazines that do. The other piece of context, it's you wouldn't really call Captain Billy's Whizbang the Playboy of the day, but it did have it tended to have a little pictorial section in the middle. A lot of times it was scantily clad movie stars. Sometimes they would just be like artist models, and a lot of times they were just full-color cartoons that exhibited the same sort of humor that we are reading through in these jokes.
And the covers are really pretty. They are a little bit racy, but I think some of the fashion on the covers is kind of fun.
Yeah. And I mean, they're eye-catching, which is what they were supposed to be. Now let's look at another favorite target of Whizbang jokes, the local authorities, the volunteer services, the town infrastructure. Here's a classic dialogue regarding the local fire department. Hello, is this the chief of the fire department? Yes, this is the chief. Well, my house is on fire. How long has it been burning? A half hour. Did you try putting water on it? Yes, but it won't go out. Then, tain't no use in us coming over because that's all we're going to do. Goodbye. Yep, there's a certain level of dry sarcasm in these. Now let's look at a bit of physical comedy. Captain Billy loved to write about his hired help on the farm. He published this wild announcement in one of the issues. Extra, extra, ladies and gentlemen, don't fail to be in Robbinsdale next Tuesday at 4 o'clock a.m. to witness a daring feat of Peter, our hired man. This brave, snooze-grinding son of toil will endeavor to dive off the top of the highest building in Robbinsdale into a 6-foot tank of solid concrete, playing ukulele, eating raw liver, and keeping perfect time. The spectacular dive by Pete will be for a worthy cause. All proceeds from the entertainment will be donated to the Starving Plumbers of Chicago. Admission free.
Pete, snooze grinding is such a Minnesotan term. For our listeners who might not know, snooze is slang for moist snuff or dipping tobacco, which was super popular among the Swedish and Scandinavian settlers in Hennepin County back then.
Oh yeah, every farmer in Robbinsdale had a tin of snooze in his pocket. So did most of the boys I rode the school bus with. Speaking of local services, how about this little joke about the quietness of our town's recreation? It is so quiet in our Robbinsdale bowling alleys that you can almost hear a pin drop.
I actually really like that one. So that's, how about this joke? About
you are easily amused.
I think that's funny. You hear a pin drop. Yes. In a bowling alley.
Yes. Yeah, I got it.
Okay, how about this joke about the local cement mixers? Goofy McGlue of the Cement Mixers Union stuck up for a get-together gathering of a binding nature. His motion was referred to the head cheesemaker of the Robbinsdale Cooperative Creamery.
See, the puns were absolutely nonstop. Now let's talk about how Captain Billy wrote about alcohol. He was openly defiant of the dry laws. He loved to write about his search for the wee snifter or a cold drink. Here is a hilarious story he wrote after taking a trip down to Florida where William Jennings Bryan, the famous politician and fundamentalist leader, was living. I woke up in Chicago with an ice pack attached to my fevered brow, and appreciating that the United States is the land of personal liberty, I hied forth towards Miami to see if I might be able to obtain a wee snifter. Miami is now the legal home of William Jennings Bryan. And I did not have much luck in satisfying an unquenchable thirst. Anyway, if I did, it wouldn't be nice to tell about it. Mr. Bryan may have something to do with keeping Miami and the state of Florida bone dry, which it isn't. So, more power to him. Florida may be dry, but in the unmortal words of our snuff-chewing hired man, I am pleased to report that there are plenty of damp rascals here. Understand the Floridians are seriously considering Bryan for United States Senator. Had the pleasure of the day of driving through the backyard of the commoner's palatial home, but all I could see was the rear door of his smokehouse. Mr. Bryan was too busy addressing a Baptist convention to even invite me to lunch. Tomorrow he's slated for a Bible talk in the city park, and if I get up in time and feel all right, I shall listen to his discourse. Later. Didn't get up in time.
He didn't get up in time. We all know he was sleeping off a hangover from one of those damp rascals.
He actually wrote about the dangerous reality of bootleg alcohol back then, too. So here's a snippet where he talks about a mysterious bottle he was gifted. Somebody presented me with a nice, new-appearing black bottle bearing a shiny, greenish-colored label. The alleged bonded stamp had a peculiar shade and indicated a bourbon of 12 summers. The contents, however, bore the taste of a reverse action to an old maid's age, but the cayenne pepper, ether, and Tabasco sauce got in its damnable work. 2 hours later, I passed by the Ashley Airport located in Robbinsdale near the Whizbang Farm. Interesting. Never heard it called the Ashley Airport. I'm guessing he was too sick to fly.
Well, the bootleg liquor was basically poison. I mean, cayenne pepper, ether, Tabasco. It's kind of a miracle that Captain Billy survived the 1920s at all. No wonder he said, all we have to do in Robbinsdale to feel the spirit of the good old days is to eat an ear of corn and drink a pint of water.
Oh, I think you sound more like Captain Billy than I do, because the actual alcohol would kill you.
And it really was a different world. By the time the 1930s rolled around, the carefree, slightly naughty humor of the Roaring Twenties began to clash with the reality of the Great Depression. People just didn't have the dimes to spend on joke books anymore. In October 1930, Fawcett Publications packed up their offices in Robbinsdale and moved to the Sexton Building in downtown Minneapolis.
Yep, and that's when they lowered the cover price to 15 cents. And just a few years later, in October 1935, they relocated the entire empire to New York City and Greenwich, Connecticut. The final episode of Captain Billy's Whizbang went on sale May 1936, ending our little magazine's 17-year run.
And Captain Billy himself passed away from a heart attack in Hollywood in February 1940. But his sons took over the business, and they pivoted to something that would shape pop culture for the next several decades, comic books. They created Fawcett Comics, and their flagship character was Captain Marvel, who actually debuted in a comic book called Whiz Comics, which was a direct nod to the old magazine and the dad who had started it all on a hand press in Robbinsdale.
Yep, and of course, Captain Marvel's alter ego is Billy. And Captain Marvel was so popular in the 1940s that he actually outsold Superman.
Shazam!
DC Comics eventually sued them for copyright infringement, which dragged on for years, but the impact of that character was huge. Elvis Presley famously styled his haircut, his stage capes, and even his lightning bolt logo after Captain Marvel Jr.
That's amazing. I didn't know that. And it's wild to think that Elvis Presley's entire signature look can be traced back to a comic line born from a racy joke magazine written in a parlor in Robbinsdale, Minnesota.
Yep, we're a big-time small town, if you know what I mean.
I don't. That's our show for today. We hope you enjoyed this deep dive into the jokes and the history of Captain Billy's Whizbang. It was cheesy, it was dated, it was definitely a product of its time, but it put Robbinsdale on the map. Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one.
City every Saturday to see our friends. Hitting the bus back home, sitting hand in hand. When the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, in Robbinsdale.
Our theme music is provided by Gabe Barnett and the Rounders.
Oh, yeah.
A miserly farmer near Robbinsdale was in Brainerd. What was he doing in Brainerd?
So this miserly farmer, it says, was near Robbinsdale. No, this miserly farmer near Robbinsdale was actually up in Brainerd when he received a telegram from his hired man, which read, "Come home! Your best cow is dying!" The farmer was weeping when he alighted from the train, but his hired man gave him a reassuring pat on the back. "Brace up, boss! I thought I'd break the news gently." "It's your wife that's dead."
Oh, no.
We can't include that.
Jeez. Okay. Is that funny?
No. In 1924, I guess it was.